Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I'd probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk. That's right. We're live. We're back. We're back. It's been a while. It's been at least a couple of weeks here. I was gone. I was out. It was the big American traditional family road trip off to the West Coast, Seattle and back. Actually, my son and I took a train out and then drove back with the rest of the fam just over the last couple days. We got in real late last night. In fact, it's about 1 a.m., I think, when we finally closed the garage door, crawled ourselves up into between the sheets, and called it a night. So if I'm a little more scattered than usual today, don't be too surprised. Not that I think anyone is expecting us to be any less than normal scattered, but here we are, and we got a great show set up for you today. We're gonna be missing Jay Garman. He's off doing his duty as groomsman this weekend, which I'm gonna have to talk to him about that next week. I thought that was done. You know, you get to be our age, and you figure that stuff's behind you. It's all done. So we'll find out what that's all about. But I'm hoping. I know Dave Sparky Sanganaki keeps trying to get in here, and I'm watching him bounce in and out. We'll see if that comes through. Either way, we are definitely going to have on in just a little bit author Ray Daniels. Now, author Ray Daniels has written his first novel. It's called Terminated. I've read it. He's also, though, a highly respected short story artist and has, in fact, won some great awards. I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about that, though, when he comes on. And I can tell you, before we even get into it, though, the book was very, very good. Great action thriller, police procedural, good stuff, mystery, lots of action and activity, and also lots of tech. So we'll have a lot of fun talking about that. Now, this last, there's so many things to cover. We've been gone, like I said, for a couple of weeks. I'm not going to try to catch you up on 2 or 3 weeks worth of back up and news and so on, but I will tell you there's been a couple of really cool things happening lately in the mobile world. I'm excited about this. So let's start first with the really good things. I think this is awesome. We've talked about this a few times in the past before. We may even touch on this a little bit with Ray Daniels when he does come on. Is that Google and Microsoft have agreed, they've decided, yes, they're going to do it. They're adding a kill switch to all of the new smartphones. Now, this is something that had been mandated in Europe, or at least had been talked about, that Apple's iOS 7 includes a feature calling it an activation lock, which is, so, you know, I should explain what this is. So a kill switch is someone takes your phone. Right now, they can take that phone, they can access the internet with it, they can make phone calls with it, they can do whatever. You know, if you've got your little password, your four number protection or whatever it may be, and then, you know, these things work and they don't work. But anyways, if you do lose it, right now there's not a lot that you can do. You can complain, you can put in a report, you can try to cut your service off through your carrier, that sort of thing, but this is a little bit beyond that. This is a kill switch and enables you to completely disable the device remotely. That means that if somebody steals it, it's not going to do them any good, because you can just boom, kill it. That device is dead. They can't reassign it to any other carrier. They can't reuse it. They can't unlock it and wipe it and all that other good stuff. It's just gonna be done. It's dead. So this is kind of cool. This is kind of a cool thing. And a good thing. And in fact, where it's been implemented, it has in fact actually worked. to decrease crime, which was a little surprising to me. I wasn't sure that it would actually do a lot to decrease it, that people would just be saying, well, hey, I'll take my chances. Maybe it will be locked. Maybe it won't be. But it seems to really have made a difference. And in fact, in San Francisco is one of the places where they've seen a significant decrease in crime since they implemented the kill switch stuff. So that'll be interesting to see that come through. Like I said, that's Google and Microsoft are adding that. That's going to be happening over the next couple of months. The new phones that come out, you'll see, are all going to have that added on to them. Now, also in mobile news, though, and this is also a very good thing, I think. Maybe you don't. I don't know if you're got a lot of Apple stock or something, but President Obama signed into law, it's okay for you to unlock your cell phone. That's right. You can now jailbreak those cell phones without fear of legal reprisal. I don't know how afraid you were of that in the first place, but you can do it now and not even have to worry about it. Now, this was originally introduced, this act, back in 2013. It was, in fact, it was part of a We the People petition that, and if you haven't seen that, you can go to the We the People website, and there's a ton of petitions on there. Supposedly after they reach a certain number of signatures, those will be reviewed by the White House. This one that was designed to say, hey, it shouldn't be illegal to unlock a phone that you own, to do whatever you want to it, to jailbreak it, got more than 100,000 signatures. And you know, it's kind of an interesting thing, because this used to not be illegal. It's only really been illegal for about a year and a half, about 18 months or so. There's the we all know about the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So the DMCA has a lot of really kind of usurious acts and legalities and fine print in it that make doing a lot of things illegal, so that they can be, you know, they can come over and and yell at you and wave guns in your face and take money from you or throw you in jail. But there was an exception in the DMCA, in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. There was an exception in it that specifically said that you could take your phone and you could shift your service to other carriers. You could use your devices abroad using local SIM cards, all this other kind of stuff. But once that exception expired back in January of 2013, then all of that activity, including jailbreaking the phones, once again became illegal. So there was a lot of third-party unlocking services and apps and things that made it super easy to do. And a lot of those were banned out of the Apple Store because, of course, they were promoting and facilitating actions which were technically illegal. Even though there's, if you really wanted to do it, of course, there were about 1,000,001 how-to documents on the internet and YouTube and other places. And we've talked about it, of course, here many times. And all this, you know, and I'm not going to go into deep detail on the reasons of why people want to jailbreak their phone, except to say that it does give you some features, functionalities, and less features and functionality and more flexibility than a lot of other things that you can do to your phone. People like adding different launchers, doing different things with them, getting access to making calls, even though they're only on Wi-Fi, you know, these kind of things that that may be difficult or impossible to do. And also, as I mentioned earlier, even just switching carriers is a big thing. And I think that's probably the most dramatic change that we're going to see now that this is allowed, is you're going to see a big resurgence of phones that are for sale, used phones, refurb phones, phones that are for sale that have been jailbroken, that now can be thrown onto any carrier. Doesn't matter if it's AT&T, Verizon, wherever you've bought it from, now you can pick it up and you can add it to the one that you want it to be on. And that's just a good thing. That's a good thing for everybody, I think. I got one last thing that I definitely want to talk. Actually, I got two that I want to talk about here. One is, did you notice that Facebook was down? Now, like I said, I've been traveling this last couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. One of the things I've been doing, though, quite often, is throwing a lot of pictures and a lot of comments and posts and things up on Facebook to let people know where I was at. Well, Friday, last night, yesterday afternoon. Facebook was down for about an hour. It was around 11:30 a.m. in Central Time, and the report that I read said that Facebook lost about $20,000 for every minute the site was offline. So about $1.2 million were lost in the 60 or so minutes that Facebook couldn't be accessed. This was devastating to a lot of people. Apparently, people were very, very upset about this, that Facebook was down. And in fact, the LA Sheriff's Office, a guy named Sergeant Brink from the sergeant there, sent out Twitter reports saying that they were getting phone calls, 911 calls, reporting their distress that Facebook was not available. This is disturbing. if this is true. Now, this was, of course, reported widely, and this did come from a legitimate police department and Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department Twitter account that this was happening. But recent information says, maybe not. Maybe this was just someone having a little bit of fun. The Sergeant Burton Brink, who is the spokesman for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Crescenta Valley Station, said that he may have tweeted it out a little quicker without verifying it. He had the information from someone else, and it turns out that that no one at the 911 offices in the sheriff's information bureau was aware of any Facebook related phone calls. So, you know, yeah, I guess it just goes to show you, you just can't believe everything you read on the internet, particularly on Twitter and Facebook, even if you're reading it live from a validated account. Sometimes people just get that info wrong and we're moving a little too quick. Even so, though, boy, I hope nobody in listening range was too upset. It was a beautiful day yesterday, at least where I was. It was a good time to get away from that computer, get outside, take some pictures, do what you wanted to do. That was the only thing that disturbed me. I was actually in Sioux Falls, on the falls, when that went down, trying to post some pictures of my adventures on the falls and could not do it. So I was a little disappointed, but that's okay. You know, it just gave me an opportunity to take even more pictures and then get out there. I'm going to do one more. Yeah, we'll do one more last bit of good news here. This is great stuff. The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, they just busted up a $275 million credit card scam, and they're suing everybody involved, which is great. This is great. So what they did is there's a whole bunch of companies and individuals that are involved in what amounts to an elaborate shell game, and this kind of relates to it relates to this whole concept of companies that are coming in on patent disputes, and they're also too wanting to let children purchase things through apps and all this other stuff. So now it's interesting. I don't have all of the full detail on this, but basically what I believe it comes down to is that if you sign up, you had an app, you know, you buy something for your kid, you did it with a credit card, it's through the app store or somewhere else, but there's you know, not necessarily just the in-game purchases, but a whole bunch of other stuff going on. This would allow that child, without parental supervision, to continue purchasing things, costing you money on your credit card. The FTC is cracking down on this now. They're saying we're not going to allow this to happen. And this is a good thing. Like I said, this is just a really good thing. I'm going to have more information available. As I said, I don't have full details on it yet. I've just started to become aware of this information right now. So do pay attention to our Facebook page, where I post most of the information that I get and news during the week. That is facebook.com /TechTalk, WRLR. You can take a look at that. You can also, of course, find us at techtalk.wrlr.fm. And that'll redirect also to our blog posting where we have our podcasts, recorded stories, and occasional articles that I write as well. So all sorts of good stuff that you can find there. Do we have time? I think we have time. I've got time for one last little bit of news that I had queued up. We were talking about Facebook, and I was talking about posting pictures on Facebook, something I do frequently, you know, through my personal Facebook account anyways. I throw those up when we're traveling, when we're doing different things and all this. We also use, however, in my house, Picasa. Picasa, if you don't know, is owned by Google and has been for quite some time. It was a precursor to sort of the Google Plus Photos. We still use it because it's a great desktop photo management software, and we've just enjoyed using it. You can post directly from Picasa to Google Plus. You can't post directly from Picasa to Facebook easily, but I've developed some, you know, workarounds for that that my wife uses and has gotten comfortable with, so that works out well. Well, if you're a big user though right now of Google Plus, and yes, I'm talking to both of you, you may want to be aware that they're going to uncouple the pictures part, the photos, Google Plus photos, to be outside of Google Plus. Now, I'm interested to hear and see how this is going to impact Picasa. Picasa has survived through a lot of changes like this, and Picasa survived the Google Plus changes. Google Plus came in and was, as you may or may not recall, was going to be the Google thing. That was going to be the place that you went to do all your Googling, and Google activity and Google Hangouts was going to be there, and you had Google Plus photos and everything else was happening. Well, Hangouts took its step away a couple of weeks ago, and now Photos is coming quickly behind it. I think this is a pretty good indication that Google Plus is kind of going to fade away a little bit. I don't believe they were able to get the critical mass that they wanted to get people using it. I think most that are using it, and I do use Google Plus a tiny bit. I kind of broke away from it myself, even the little that I was doing. But I think the people that were using it not as their primary social access point, but more as an adjunct to some of the other services that they have. If you use a service like Buffer or IFTT, you know, if this, then that, then you were able to do things like take any picture published to Facebook and automatically throw it out to Google Plus, or vice versa, or anything that I put to Twitter with this hash sign, make sure that it shows up in Google Plus too. I did a lot of that as well and used it that way. That's pretty much the primary way that I used Google Plus. If you're a user out there listening right now and you do use Google Plus and Google Plus Photos and you're disappointed by this move, I want to hear from you, because I'd be very curious to hear what use case scenario you've got going on that you're using Google Plus Photos integrated with your Google Plus and are not happy that it's being pulled apart. And I'd like to see that. You just post that up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. If you're not comfortable posting it publicly, you can send me a private message, or of course you can also email us anytime, techtalk@wrlr.fm. Hey, right now I am going to take us out for just a minute. We're going to do a couple of quick spots and promos and sponsors and all that kind of good stuff. Speaking of sponsors, I want to mention to you, we are a volunteer radio station. We are community-driven, community-based. If you're listening right now, you should realize that everything that you hear on this station is completely volunteer-driven. We survive and thrive because of support from people like you, but we also, too, love to give back to the community. Make sure that you are aware that we play spots because we love to make sure that people know what's happening around us. And so when you're listening to these coming up, keep in mind, you can be one of the people that's getting a spot played or a promo played for you. And also, too, there's a lot of other great shows that are here on WRLR on 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois, but we do play worldwide through the internet, and especially shows like this one get a lot of play and a lot of spread throughout. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor of this show, send me an email, techtalk@wrlr.fm. If you want to donate to the station directly, you can also do that, and everything, sponsorship and donations are tax deductible. Go to WRLR.fm. There's a little button for you right there. I will be back at you in just a minute. We're going to have Ray Daniels, author of Terminated, on in just a moment. So don't turn that dial. Don't go away. Thanks for listening. You are listening to Tech Talk on WRLR.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
Hey everyone, Anya's Polish Deli of Lake Zurich is a proud sponsor of WRLR. They recently opened a second location in Round Lake Beach at 972 East Rollins Road. They have a variety of deli meats, cheeses, and hot foods. Catering is also available to handle party needs. Their phone number is 224-338-0812, and their website is anyaspolishdeli.com. Anya's Polish Deli and Buffet in Lake Zurich is located at 772 South Rand Road.
Galaxy Stone Design is a proud sponsor of WRLR. Galaxy Stone Design has over a decade of experience in the fabrication and installation of granite and marble surfaces in the Chicagoland area. Their team of professionals handles commercial to residential projects. Galaxy Stone Design inventory includes granite, marble, handstone, and siltstone surfaces. For more information, their telephone number, 847-271-7233. Their website is galaxystonedesign.com.
Center of Serenity in Grays Lake reminds listeners, in times of war and peace, the men and women of our military dedicate themselves to serving our country. Their commitment, patriotism, sacrifice, and courage keep our country safe and strong. We appreciate the bravery of our U.S. soldiers. Let us honor those who have lost their lives in the line of duty and salute those who serve today. This reminder from Center of Serenity at 37 North Whitney Street in Grays Lake. Proud to salute the fighting forces of our country.
Attention outsiders, folkies, misfits, beatniks, nerds, weirdos, and other crusaders against the machine. You are our kind of people. Subterranean is here for you. If you find yourself sedated or incited to property damage by the same playlist of songs over and over and over, you're not alone. Subterranean plays the best music corporate mainstream radio won't touch twice a week. Join me, my co-host Ginny and Ray, and the rest of the Underground every Thursday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. and Wednesday from noon to 3. Subterranean, the home for wayward radio listeners. Playlists and podcasts at subterraneanradio.com.
All right, we are back. Okay, let's give our good new friend. Whoops! Oh, I'm. I keep making the same dumb mistake every time. I'm trying to call our author Ray Daniel. We're gonna have him on in just a moment here. I think I've got the number queued up. I just have to bring him in and make that happen. Now, Ray Daniels has written a book. He is actually a dyed-in-the-wool, I found out, technologist from all around, doing a lot of really good stuff. So we'll see. Not only can we hear about writing this book, but also to a little bit of his background and technology out in Boston, which is the place that the book is set, and there's a lot of great stuff happening there, too.
Hello, this is Ray Daniel.
Yeah, good morning, Ray. This is Michael Kassler with the Tech Talk Show. You are on air with Tech Talk. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you on. I was just doing a bad job of trying to intro you, give a little taste of your bio and stuff. But now that you're here, you can do it probably better than I. Ray, I know you've got the new book out. I want to talk about that in a minute, but just tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
I'm from the Boston area, born and bred in Boston, and have been in high tech for the past 20-some-odd years, designing computer chips. And I'm one of the, I'm a rare guy. I got a bachelor's degree in engineering with a minor in English, and that turned out to have me writing books in which we have technical people doing criminal things.
Huh. Oh, wow. No, that's... it's funny. I kind of went the other direction. I had a going for a degree in philosophy, and then I switched to technology myself. That was one thing I thought about at one point. In fact, was doing a little bit of technical writing myself. So you've been actually designing chips. What type of computer chips have you been designing? And you're continuing to do it, right? You haven't thrown away the day job quite yet, or are you going full feet first into writing?
No, I'm still designing computer chips. They're the kinds that go into your cell phones or into routers and computers. Most of the big companies I work as a consultant, so I wind up helping a lot of different companies with their chips and project to project.
Excellent, excellent. And what got you into writing specifically kind of crime, drama, and action stuff? It seems almost you know 180 degrees from what I picture chip design to be, which is a very staid sort of, very focused sort of profession.
Well, you know, what got me into writing mystery was Robert Parker and the whole Spencer series. I love those books, and eventually when you read something enough, you're like, I want to make one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I got into the idea of writing mystery. As terms of writing mystery that takes place in technology, At the time I started down this path, which was about 2005, the chip industry had some interesting things happen. We'd had one company raid another company and prove that they'd stolen their software, you know, directly from the first company. We'd had a CEO who was in prison and tried to have the judge killed by hiring hitman.
Mm-hmm.
We've had it just astounded me that we could have the sort of levels of crime and like bunch of chip designers, and so I realized that wow, you know, high tech is rife with the opportunities to plunder.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And we were talking just a little bit before the show too. I know, we sort of think of the tech industry as being, a little bit distant from that. Maybe there's not quite as much, going on as far as, that end of things, the crime stuff and all that activity. But then something pops up in the news, you know, where you see like, a Google exec dying of a heroin overdose. Or, of course, you know, there's always the ongoing security stuff happening with people hacking our accounts and taking over our bank accounts and things like this. So yeah, it seems like it is a surprisingly rich field for novelization.
Yeah, you know, the whole high tech industry has always been one that's raised a lot of passion, especially in fact now there's a new show, Halt and Catch Fire, that catches a lot of that from when I started in this in the 80s. This notion of this new technology, there's almost a gold rush feel to it. People rushing to get into a space they think is going to really take off, and taking each other under's ideas, hiring each other's people. It's surprisingly cutthroat, and so it can be a lot of fun. And then you throw in the hacking, and you throw in the fact that the NSA has got tons of exploits that they have bought and keep a supply of, or if they need to hack, people who's hacking at the NSA hacking back, the military, it just keeps growing. The number of ideas has to be culled down to make a coherent book.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And since we're talking about that, you know, so I have read the book, and it is an exciting read. And there's a ton of great ideas. And in fact, there were certain points where I was thinking, boy, you could have almost turned, you know, any three of these into its own book, and done that as well. I assume, are you going to continue writing with the same characters? Are you going to branch to different things? And I'm probably jumping ahead of where I should be, as I explained to you. I don't typically like write out questions, so we should probably talk about the book first before I ask you what you're going to do next. But let's do that. Why don't I reel myself back in for a second before I get too excited about the next thing happening? Typical technology guy, right? And talk a little bit about Terminated, and what it's about. It's set in Boston too, which is such an interesting place to envision a kind of a high tech mystery and a startup mystery with lots of money being thrown around for technology, not in Silicon Valley, but out in Boston. And what was you know, how, what was that like, and how did that impact how the novel came together?
You know, Boston and Silicon Valley, there was a time back in the day when we were neck and neck in Boston. Was Boston 128 and Silicon Valley were used in the same sentences where technology was going. And then California took off, and we had a bunch of our companies crash and burn at the same time, Jack and Prime, Data General. So there's always been this link between Boston and California. The flight going back and forth is still full. If you leave on a Monday and come back on a Friday, you're going to get a middle seat somewhere. So there's still a lot of technology connection between those two places. Boston itself is just it's almost become a classic setting for mystery. And being from Boston, I just love the city, so I love to write about it and love to share it with people who may not have had a chance to visit.
And the book does a good job of that, really. I've been a few times. I had a close friend who lived in Jamaica Plains, and I would go and visit with some regularity, and loved the city. It can be an intimidating city, though, for someone who's not a native to it, and all that. And I think that your book, though, does a really good job of making it feel more approachable, and also to you know, showing really a great side of the city that is open and has that kind of Silicon Valley feel of people just kind of meeting and hanging out, and that there's conventions going on and things happening.
And lately it's been taking off again, just because the whole app craze is the new gold rush. So creating apps and creating applications that run on phones and are wired together through the cloud, that's become the new big thing. And so there are now more and more companies starting up again in the Boston area, and also again in California, south of Marcus, where you have these kinds of companies really starting to take off. So the energy is there, and it's just, like I say, it's just hard to cull the ideas down to say, how am I going to fit it in? In this case, I combined, in Terminated, I combined, you know, three or four different elements that you see in terms of the desperation of entrepreneurs, the personal nature of failure for an entrepreneur, that they don't think, at least the first time you start a company, you don't think, oh, I started this company, it didn't work out well. You think, oh, I started this company and God hates me, and I'm a bad person, and it, there's just this huge identification of yourself that has to be there, of yourself with this idea. And if the idea is failing, if the company isn't working, it's one of the most wrenching things you go through. So I tried to capture that in the book also, in terms of what the lengths that people will go to avoid that feeling of complete failure.
Yeah, and you know, and that was one of the parts of the book that I really identified with and enjoyed quite a bit, was the main character is a guy named Tucker, who's you know, just you know, phenomenal at the job that he does, but throughout he's a little bit like, you know, he looks at the things that the people who own the company or who started the company and all that are doing with a little bit of bemusement. And it's like, what are they? They're running this thing into the ground. Why would they sell it for this much? You know, these kind of things keep occurring to them. And as a technologist myself and working in the field, of course, you know, we've all had that experience where you're like, you know, you're creating something, and I'm sure it's the same with the computer chips. You're creating this, and you're involved with the technical requirements of it, and so you kind of see a certain aspect of it that is separate and distinct from what maybe those business aspects are, and trying to link those two in your mind and head can be a difficult thing. And Tucker goes through that process of not just mentally, but physically having to connect those dots, and it makes for a very exciting book.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and Tucker, I tried to capture with Tucker, and he is a series character, so there's going to be more Tucker books. And what I tried to capture with him was kind of what it's like to be an engineer. How do you see the world? There's a lot of engineering and mystery that's similar in that when you're trying to debug a problem, you have all of this data that comes at you, and it doesn't make sense. Why doesn't this fit together? Why doesn't this work? And it seems random. And then what'll happen is you'll just have a flash of insight, suddenly you'll know why there's a bug, and then all the data will make sense all at once. And that's one of the best feelings out there when you have that flash, and suddenly everything makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to capture in the Tucker books. And that's what I think mystery readers love to have. Mystery readers love to get to the end of a mystery and go, oh, that all makes sense. And then the second thing is, oh, and I could have solved it if I had just noticed this. I would have had it.
You know, that's a really interesting thing. I never really put that together. You're absolutely right, though. And some of my fondest memories, in fact, are of those moments of epiphany where you're on the train or you're getting a sandwich and you haven't started eating. You're just walking down to it, and all of a sudden, that problem that you've been working at sitting in front of a screen for the last 3 days, you get it. And you forget about the sandwich, and you forget about getting on the train, whatever it is, and you run back to some place that you can write this thing down so you don't forget it again. And those are just amazing moments. And you're absolutely right. Tucker walks through that and kind of explains that, even for people that aren't technical, what that engineering process is like mentally.
Yeah, that's one big thing that I worked on in the book, is that people who read it don't have to be technical. They just have to be interested in characters and in people and in what's going on. Kind of what I hope is that the Tucker books were kind of like way back when we all read the Hunt for Red October, and then we all knew about submarines, but we didn't have to go through a submarine class for it. The same here. The technology that's in there is just sort of woven in so that a reader who's not familiar with it doesn't need to go to a glossary or anything. It just all fits together.
And it rings true also for someone who is involved in technology. There's enough there that you understand that the author gets it and has done it. And it's not like watching Sandra Bullock, in The Net or something like this, where you really have to hang your understanding on a hook before you can get into the story.
Right, right. Now, one of the things we love when we read is that sense of type identification. We love to say, yeah, that's exactly what it's like. That's what it was like for me. And if we get that feeling that you read it and you know that the character in you has felt the same thing, it's just a wonderful feeling. You don't feel like you're connected into the world a little better. You don't feel so alone. I think that's one of the things we try to get out of literature and out of reading, is to get that sense of connection to the people, and then also to spread out a little bit and say, well, what's it like to be like this? What's it like to go there? What's it like to live through this without having to do it yourself? And so those are all the things I tried to capture in this book, so that someone who reads it sort of gets a sense of, if it's a non-engineer, what's it like to be an engineer? If they are an engineer, like, oh, I lived through this 3 times ever.
Yep. Yeah. And from a very practical standpoint too, my wife is very much not an engineer. She's an English major and an English lit, major is her background. And so the two of us connect on so many things, and we disconnect on so many things. And I've tried to kind of give her a sense of what that thought process is like. And the closest that I've gotten up to now has been, David Allen writes his book, Getting Things Done, which is it's like a Stephen Covey, a practical how to live your life sort of thing for an engineer. And he nails it. He's got that engineering thought process. This does as well with Tucker from a very, from a narrative standpoint, which is great. I'm going to redirect us here after that. I'm not going to let that hang out there because I want to make sure we cover the things that I want to here. But one thing I know that we talked about right before coming on air, too, is books like this also tend to bring up in people's minds that constant background fear of, gosh, there's all this technology, there's things happening with technology that I don't understand because I'm not part of that world, and over again, I hear about people being hurt by it, with, you mentioned the NSA and security issues, our accounts being hacked, our passwords being stolen, bank accounts being wiped out, What is going on in this book that would help or or maybe add to that fear?
Well, I think one of the toughest things about hacking is that so much of it is just person-to-person trickery. And Tucker, you know, uses that for good. But he's also a trickster, and hackers are tricksters. And so one scam that's going around right now, it's pretty virulent, is calling people and telling them that, this is Microsoft, we've discovered a virus on your computer, we need to help you fix it, go to this website and download the software and we'll help you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, you go to the website, you download the software, and now they own your computer.
Yep.
Right? And that there's a certain level of sort of technical violation where you sort of say, oh, they got my credit card. Oh, bummer, right? But there's this, like, someone called me and lied to me and tricked me that is so much more personal. And I think that's the sort of thing that people would see in the book is, you know, the way trickery works, the way tricks happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what people have to do to protect themselves is to have a little bit of skepticism about anything, such as, hi, this is the technical department of the world we're calling to fix your computer.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
The other thing, of course, you know, and the other thing, of course, is that, you know, one can assume that any password you put out on the internet will eventually be stolen in an encrypted form. And then what they do once they've stolen a big database of passwords is they try to figure out what the passwords are. And the way they do that is guessing. There's no way to decrypt the password, but if you can guess the password and then see that your guess looks the same as the actual one, then you know what the password is. So the guessing has become so sophisticated that almost any set of passwords with a word and some numbers, especially numbers replacing specific letters like 3 for E, for example,
mm-hmm.
those are pretty easy to hack today.
Mm-hmm.
There are some encryption systems where a hacker with a nice hardware setup can throw 8 billion guesses a second at a password. And so one can assume that a password is going to be stolen, and if it's a password that's a word or something, going to be cracked. So what you want to make sure you do is you want to make sure that you don't have that same password all through your life.
Yep, yep.
That's the other big piece of.
And that's really, I was having this very, very similar discussion with my wife just the other day that, you know, the passwords that we choose, I was saying, really are less important, really, than the idea that we have to have a different password for every major site that we use. Because,
yeah.
You know, for us, you know, for me and my wife, anyways, we're not necessarily, you know, public figures or, you know, a Bill Gates or so on that someone's going to, you know, sort of randomly select to attack and hack and try to access all of their account information. But, you know, we have Target cards, we have credit cards, we have this and that, all sorts of things going on that are accessible via the internet. And if we use the same password for all of them, all it takes is some stupid little, you know, no-name website to get broken into, and then the person using
exactly
that one over and over again. Yeah.
Yep. Is that, and then also, you know, whenever you can, another big tip is if a site allows you to do this thing called two-factor authentication,
mm-hmm.
where if you are on a new computer and you log in, they send a number to your phone, and then you have to put the number in. That's important wherever you can use it. You know, Gmail has it, Facebook has it, Twitter has it. So if someone does get your password, they still can't get into your account because they're on your phone.
That's right. Yeah, and I turned that on for Gmail as soon as it was available. And, I'll be perfectly honest, people, you know, who haven't done it yet, yeah, it's a little frustrating occasionally because you do have that second action that you have to do. Sometimes you have to wait a couple minutes to get that text or the phone call with the code. But you know, to have that security and that safety in mind, at least for me, is totally worth it. Totally worth that little bit of a little extra wait that I have to do.
Yep. And of course, as an author now, what I wind up doing is I wind up looking at these things and going, well, how could Tucker circumvent this if he needed to? You know, did he get the phone? Would he be able to see the phone through a telescope, and that wouldn't work. Part of the fun of writing these books is looking at all of the hacking techniques that are out there, and then seeing how they can be circumvented or how they can be applied to something that Tucker's trying to do, mm-hmm. because he needs information to solve a murder.
Yeah, and that was also, too, and you already alluded to this a bit, is, you know, a really great part of the book was that there wasn't a lot of technical, like, you know, like I mentioned the net earlier with Sandra Bullock, there wasn't a lot of, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to crack into the thing and all this. It really was a lot of the social engineering part, you know, selecting someone at the company that Tucker knew that he could woo into giving him the information that he needed, or, you know, finding the phone and knowing that, oh, most of the phones are set to not go back to a security screen for a certain amount of time. So if I go quickly enough, I can, you know, I can still access it and do what I want to do. And certainly these aren't things that we necessarily associate with a high-tech hacker sort of situation, but we should. Because that's really how things are done most of the time.
Yep, and also they're fun. You know, MacGyver was a show that was on for a long time because people enjoy watching someone figure something out like that. And so that's another thing I try to make sure that are in the books, that you just have the main point of Terminated is that it be a fun book, right? My big goal is that someone who has to fly cross country, you know, picks it up in Boston, and when they get to California, they're bummed that they have to land and stop reading. But the time just goes right by, and so that's the goal there, is to use all of this together to create a fun book in the end.
Yeah, and again, I'm not just saying this because you're on that, you've agreed to come on the air and spend time with me, but it accomplishes that very handily. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I got a preview copy, which I was able to read digitally with my Kindle, and I didn't have the cross country flight to read it on, but boy, it didn't take me a long time to devour it. I think a couple of days and I was through, and again got to the end in those last couple of sentences and thinking, okay, what is Tucker going to do next? Where is he going to go?
Well, so I'm actually working on and finishing up the manuscript for the next book that will come out a year from now. That's going to the publisher this month, and it's called Corrupted Memory. And in that book, Tucker discovers that he had a brother because the guy was found murdered in front of Tucker's house. And so we're going to learn a lot about Tucker's family and what's going on. And that one centers more on the defense industry. So the sort of the companies that make missiles and whatnot, and the secrets that are there. So a whole other avenue of investigation.
Oh, excellent. Oh, that is cool. And when do you expect that to be out? Or, well, you know, so Terminated is out now. Is that true? I know it originally was going to not come out for close to another week, but it's on the shelves today.
Its official date is the 8th. If you go on say Amazon, I think the Kindle version downloads now, and I think that the Amazon's taking orders now that they'll have out by the 6th, I think, for 200 people. So it's starting to hit the shelves.
Excellent.
It'll definitely be everywhere by next week.
Excellent. And then the sequel, you're expecting to have that completed, you were saying, by later this fall or by early next year?
The sequel will come out a year from now.
Oh, a year from now.
We may be talking again. And then there's the one after that. Comes out a year after that, so we're going year to year to year, each year a new Tucker book.
Beautiful. You're gonna make us sweat it for for a year. I'm gonna have to pull us closed here fairly quickly. But I was curious too. Now, and I was on your Twitter account, which people can find you if you go to twitter.com @RayDaniel. And it's MYSTRY is for the Twitter account. If they want to find more information about your books in general, or the main page for Terminated, that's at RayDanielMystery.com. Is that correct?
It is, exactly.
Perfect, perfect. So people can find out more there as well. But I was curious about one thing. Like I said, I was following your Twitter account. I'm always interested to figure out what people use to create the books and the writings that they do. And I see that you're a user of Nisus. And how long have you been using it? And what is it that makes Nisus work for you? And I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
So Nisus is the word processor on the Mac that works with doc files, and it's just basically classic word processor, but it's got a lot of fancy features and it's so fast, and I just absolutely love it. So this morning, that's right, I was moved. I love this thing. Oh my god! I designed the books initially in a piece of software called Scrivener. And Scrivener is where you can pull all your information together and create the novel, and then it outputs a .doc file at the end. And then after that, after it goes in my editing process, I work in Nisus and RTF.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, Scrivener is a very popular piece of software for just what you're talking about, is really bringing those ideas together. And I imagine especially with mystery books and things like that, keeping the plot lines straight and understanding the characters and the relationships to each other, Scrivener does a great job of making sure that you don't lose sight of some of those connections.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Ray, and I apologize, Ray, I have got to pull us to a close. I'm past my time limit as it is. In fact, I can't thank you enough, though, for coming on air and spending time with us. And absolutely, I look forward to reading the next Tucker mystery and hopefully having you back on again and talking about that adventure as well.
Well, fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great week, and thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
That was Ray Daniel, author of Terminated. As he said, you can find more information about the book at raydanielmystery.com. The book is available now throughout all the major retailers and so on. And of course, we'll have links to all of that great stuff at techtalk.wrlr.fm or facebook.com/techtalkwrlr when the podcast comes out, which should be fairly soon. We're spending a little bit of time catching up from the road trip and all that good stuff. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave you with just like two or three quick off the top of my head cool sites. I'm not going to do an official cool sites set up here, but ones that I used on the road trip. And the main one that we did to set up all of our planning and our trips and our links and all the other stuff, I know I've mentioned it to you before, I'm going to say it again, this is probably going to be my cool site of the year, I think, is going to be roadtrippers.com. Free mobile apps, online apps, set up your trip, find interesting things, off the beaten path, whatever you want to do with it. There are some hiccups to it. Using it hardcore like we did this last 2 weeks or so, we did run into a couple of headaches, but nothing major, and it was just incredibly useful. Also, too, and I know you guys are probably aware of this if you're traveling at all, hotels.com and tripadvisor.com both have mobile apps. Both allowed us to find hotels that were clean, that had the facilities and services we wanted, and that were cheap, 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 which was one of our primary considerations throughout the entirety of this trip, was as cheap as we could find. And they did it for us. They did it. I know also, too, kayak.com is a kayak. That app is also very valuable. If we had been doing this show yesterday, I would have definitely wanted to alert you to the fact that the Kayak Pro application was free. I don't think it is anymore, but I grabbed it. I snagged it just yesterday. It was free for about 2 days. And so I didn't get a chance to really expend and use that, but there are a lot of great options for traveling out there. On that note, I have got to run. I believe we've got Rob shot first. Robbie Rigel is on deck coming up next. And so don't turn away. You are listening to WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. This was Tech Talk, and that was Ray Daniel, author of Terminated, that we had on earlier. Stay tuned, and then come back and check us out next week, too. Have a great week, everyone. Oh, you know what I got to do though? I gotta head us out with some podcast only music of the week. How about if we do a little? Let me see what I can bring up here. Quick. I think what I'm gonna play for you is a little bit of a Hurricane by MSMR, and this is off of their. This is off of their album. I don't know what it is. Secondhand something. So I'm going to play this for you. It's a podcast only song of the week. Thanks again. Stay tuned. Come back for us next week. Have a great one. Great to be back. Take care.
Storm that